Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Friday, January 18th, 2019. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. Nice to be here.
Also with me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, it's a fun Friday, so that means Wacky Tie Day.
Oh, Wacky Ties, and me without my Wacky Tie. All right, that's a bummer. So first, I know, Andrew, you had a follow-up to something that we talked about earlier this week, so I wanted to give you an opportunity on that.
Yeah, so yesterday I was trying to make this comparison of that Collection 1 data breach, mm-hmm. which is 87 gigabytes in size.
Yes.
And instead of trying to do math on my own, I should have just asked Siri.
Yes.
Because the number I gave was off by a factor of 100. Mm-hmm. So, okay, so I have an ebook copy of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, which is, I think you said, the
It is the book with the most words. Yeah, the book with the most pages and the highest word count of all the series.
Okay, so the file size is 2.1 megabytes.
Okay.
Which means that it would take 41,400 of those to equal the data breach.
41,000 book fives. Jeez Louise, that's a lot. Okay. And of course, because I have a set of Harry Potter hardcovers on my shelf, I'm thinking now, five was by far the heaviest one to carry around, so how much would that weigh if you printed it all out? So now that's what's going through my mind. Maybe I should ask my voice assistant and see if she can tell me.
Well, we're going to get the weight and also the width, and we're going to mathematically stack them up together and see if it reaches the moon.
You know, I don't know. I'd be impressed if it just reached from my house to your house, to be honest. That'd be pretty far.
In your head, almost. You know, 41,000 copies of the book, and they're 2 inches thick. That's 82,000 inches. That's what, 820 feet. So.
See?
That's it?
Now I'm a little disappointed. Okay, we'll do some other math, and we'll see if we can get a more interesting number for you. Before we do that, I do want to talk to both of you about a little bit more follow-up in a little different way. So, Andrew, you were on and talked to me on
8,200 feet.
8,200 feet. Andrew, you came on and we talked about the health benefits of Wi-Fi signals, more or less. And there's been some interesting evolution out of that. So go ahead and tell us about it.
Well, I just wanted to do a follow-up to that. I wrote a link teaser to this guide that I had found a while ago, actually. It's called A Rough Guide on How to Spot Bad Science. Because I'm getting, like, people commenting, people on Twitter saying how wrong I am, and they're pointing me to these studies that say Wi-Fi actually does cause cancer, mm-hmm. which is fine. I mean, it's fine if you disagree, but I just wanted to urge caution and say that, well, a scientific study should be taken in the context of a field as a whole, mm-hmm. because there are so many factors that go into a study. If it's a blind study, if it's been replicated by other scientists, so there's a whole lot more than just, you know, Googling something.
Sure. And, you know, different people go into different varieties of studies with sometimes something to prove. Excuse me.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, somebody may go
John
into
Oliver,
something trying to
John
prove.
Oliver went into that. That's that John Oliver segment you pointed to is must viewing for everyone. Mm-hmm. Thanks for finding that, Andrew. It's hilarious. It's spot on.
Yeah, it's very funny. I mean, he's basically just talking about how sometimes the media can misinterpret and sensationalize these things.
Well, mm-hmm. his focus was on how the media extracts from studies that may be suspect or not duplicated. But the thing that stuck out at me in your article was that you have to have some sort of measured self-credibility about how you make assertions, especially when it's so easy to make assertions on social media. For example, you can't tell your high school teacher that you hate math and then turn around and be claim to be an authority on climate science because you found an article and you pasted it into Twitter.
Yeah.
Right? So
what do you mean that's not how you become an expert on a thing?
Yeah. I mean, if you have to have some sort of self-evaluation in the process before you start typing things and telling people they're wrong. I mean, if you've taken high school chemistry and you've taken high school physics and you've taken advanced mathematics in high school and trig algebra and you read Scientific American every month and you follow Neil deGrasse Tyson and science guy Bill Nye and you watch the right TV shows and National Geographic and you really take an effort to understand science and you have some background and some scholastic experience, you know, then you might be in a position to read an article and figure out what it's trying to say. Mm-hmm. But if you don't have any experience at all, and you're just buffeted by the whims and the currents of social media, then it doesn't do any good to just, as Andrew said in his article, is wanting to Google an article and then push it back in somebody's face and say, well, you're wrong because this says this. Mm-hmm. Just does not work. And so you have to develop a sense about who has credibility, too. I mean,
right.
There are people who are doing crackpot science or people who are doing podcasts who don't have any scientific training. And mm-hmm. then there are people who are very good. Maybe they don't have PhDs, but they're very good and they're experienced in science. Mm-hmm. And they have credibility. And so you have to pick your sources very carefully. One time, I remember years and years ago, my brother called me on the phone and he said, Fox News, this was 25 years ago. They found an alien. They're going to do an autopsy. There's going to be an alien autopsy live on Fox TV tonight. I said, my brother, I did not read about this on the Scientific American. I did not read about it in scientific journals. I did not read about it in even any science fiction magazines. It wasn't on the national news. You know, just because Fox is doing an alien autopsy doesn't make it true. You know, that we discovered an alien. So you have to be really good at selecting your sources, and some scientific training and some study and experience helps you pick those sources. The internet doesn't teach you how to do that, by the way. Mm-hmm. The internet doesn't train you how to understand the internet itself.
And I think part of that is, particularly now with the proliferation of information available, like, it goes both ways. Like, if you are not a person who has an exceptional amount of knowledge on something, like, maybe it's on you to go get some before you start holding forth about it. But it's also on the receptor of that information to figure out, like, if you are a person with credibility on this or not. Or, right. You know, this doesn't sound quite right to me, or look for another way that information is verified. So, you know, we've talked about that exact thing on this show when we've discussed particularly some of the Bloomberg report is the one that I think of that other organization has been able to verify. So and that doesn't mean it's fake, but it means that there's something else going on in that story, I think, you know, that's been reported as fact, that it's entirely possible that for whatever reason, you know, circumstances came together and in fact, that story is not true. And, you know, it's up to everybody to have a little bit of skepticism about some things. And you can start to change those levels of skepticism depending who the source is, because, you know, like John, for example, you know, is reading Super Duper Science Weekly or whatever, and, you know, and they've proven right, and they link out to all the data that they've used to draw the conclusion they're drawing, and they talk about all the stuff that they did to get to where they are and to make this conclusion, and they set all that information out in front of you. So as that stuff is proven true over time, it's much easier to believe Super Duper Science Weekly. So, you know, that becomes a thing that you can start to kind of consider.
Andrew pointed to a really nice guide on spotting bad science, and it goes into the technical aspects like unrepresentative samples, no control group, lack of or selective reporting of data, or unsupported conclusions. That's all the technical mm-hmm. side of science and science analysis. But when you receive a tweet or an email from someone who's contradicting you, you want to watch for telltale signs of arrogance and anger and ridicule. Because the first technique that people use in trying to put their point across is to diminish you personally, attack you, say something about how stupid you are, and then point to an article that affirms their view, and they've psychologically prepped you. So you want to watch out for that kind of attitude on Twitter and other social media, where people use those psychological techniques to artificially enhance their own prestige by diminishing you.
Yeah, and we're going to talk a little bit more about combating that in a minute. Right now, what I want to do is talk to you about our sponsors. Our first sponsor today is Eve Home, and everything about Eve Home, in particular, Eve Energy. Everything about Eve Energy says you are in control. You can switch appliances on and off with a tap or with a voice command to your voice assistant. And you can automate everyday essentials with timers. You can have things turn on. More importantly, you can have them turn off at particular times so that things are just operating when you need them to operate. You can tell how much power you're using by monitoring all of that within the app. You can also take advantage of HomeKit because Eve hardware is HomeKit compatible, which is part of where the Siri comes from, but it also gives you advanced security as far as being able to hang these devices off your network and be able to know that that's not the attack vector that somebody's going to be able to use to get into your home network. It also has, again, thanks to the HomeKit operability, really, really tight integration with the voice assistant in your phone. And part of that means you can also use Siri shortcuts in order to get some things to turn on and turn off, operate how you like them. Eve Energy connects directly to your phone or iPad using Bluetooth low energy and doesn't require a bridge for operation. So you can set timers for anything that you've got set up with Eve Energy. You can have things even respond to occupancy so that things are working properly and you don't have to teach anyone else in your house how to operate anything. They just walk into the room, the lights come on. It's really great. So those are just a few of the things that you can do with Eve Energy. And you can find out more about Eve Energy at evehome.com. That's EveHome.com. Our second sponsor today is Capterra. And Capterra is the leading free online resource to help you find the best software solution for your business. With over 700,000 reviews of products from real software users, you can discover everything you need in 700 different categories. Everything from great big topics like project management down to very specific things like studio management software. No matter what solution you need, Capterra makes it easy to find it fast. Visit capterra.com/TDO for free today and find the right tools to make this the year for your business. That's capterra.com/TDO. Now, one of the other follow-ups on this is that we talked a little bit about how to detect if someone is sort of setting you up to be disagreed with. But what are some of the things, Andrew, I know you had linked to a guide about fuzzy science. Can you talk a little bit about what some of those things were?
Yeah, so it's a list of 12 things to watch out for. Basically, these are red flags to watch out for. So okay. It can be something like if a headline is overly sensationalized, if it uses like a lot of emotion in it, that could
coffee
be,
cures cancer.
Yes. Or as John Oliver pointed out, smelling farts can cure cancer.
That was a good one.
Now, you know, as we said, another thing in the list is that the news media and other people can misinterpret the results. Also in the study, there could also be conflicts of interest. Maybe a company is hiring a scientist to carry out research, but the company is behind whatever they're researching, so the results are going to be biased. And I had a great comment from someone in my article. He or she sounds like they're involved in science, in the science community. And they say that this guide hits all of the key points that scientists train to look out for. And you know, in university and in practice.
Okay.
Oh, that's Dr. Brooks. Yeah, he's an international doctor. He's a frequent commenter at the Mac Observer, and he's a very highly trained physician.
Yeah, yep. I always love his comments.
Yes, shout out to our commenters. We really enjoy them.
And, you know, you could go even further than this and start diving into, you know, argumentative fallacies and cognitive biases. I mean, there's a whole list of things you could do to try to be not only as honest as possible with yourself and others, but also trying to figure out how honest other people are, too. So it's a kind of a rabbit hole.
Yeah, it really can be. And then one tactic that I have seen a lot when people disagree is I'm going to say you're wrong, but because I'm saying that, I'm going to tell you that you need to prove that you're right instead of me, instead of the burden being on me to prove that I have other information that tells me that you are incorrect.
Yeah, that's a pretty popular one.
There's another issue, too, and that is the complexity of some modern science. Mm-hmm. The atmospheric and climate models are very, very sophisticated and complex and require PhD years to understand and understand the weaknesses and strengths of. And that depth, which produces technical results, is hard to communicate to the layman.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're faced with a situation where the most sophisticated science that we face in terms of how our phone operates, the security of the phone, the climate change science, battery technology, artificial intelligence algorithms, and the opacity of how our AI algorithms work, all these things can become so vastly difficult to understand that it's hopeless for even individual scientists to grasp the field. Sometimes they can take a chunk out of it and understand a piece of it, but it takes a whole team. I was on a software team at White Sands years ago when we had a big simulation model, and it produced results that were unexpected, and we had a hard time understanding the results because each person understood their own individual technical area. Mine was the physics of the combat. But when the model was put together with all these people and produced statistical results, we knew that each piece of it was right, but we didn't have any insight into how the model generated its final results because every part of it was correct, but the results couldn't be verified mm-hmm. by some analytical means. So that's a problem for modern science and layman understanding of how science works. And so there's this eager desire to simplify the results, and we've just covered that. So that's yeah. that's an issue with the most with the deepest issues of science these days.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's part of that is it sort of feels like one of those great and terrible things. You know, the great thing is that there's more information available to more people than ever before. And the terrible thing is that there's more information available to more people than ever before.
And more avenues for them to talk about more information than ever than before.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, anybody that wants to can have a platform for free to go say whatever they want. And if they wish to back that up with actual facts or not is optional. And here we are. So
that applies in the Mac universe, too. As a reader of Mac Observer and a listener to the podcast, there are names of people, and you know who they are, who are authoritative in the Mac world
uh-huh.
and who have years of experience. And then every once in a while, one of us will discover an article, Andrew or me or Charlotte or Brian, who will just find an article written by somebody whose name we don't recognize.
Mm-hmm.
And we have no idea what their heritage and their provenance and their credibility and authoritativeness is. And they'll write a wacko article. Mm-hmm. And we'll say gently to our readers, now, you know, be careful. We don't know who this guy is.
He right.
doesn't have experience that yeah. other writers do. So when you're reading articles in the Mac universe, pay attention to the author and, mm-hmm. and how long they've been doing what they're doing and their experience.
And
yeah, like look at their track record.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in the olden days, we called that cred, Andrew. You can look that up. It's short for credibility. but you
street
used
cred.
It's like street cred, but it's, you know, like just, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to be street cred. So, you know, if Rene Ritchie comes out and says something, or Jim Dalrymple comes out and says something, like, they have a lot of cred. So it's something that you can tend to believe more than you can believe somebody who has posted many ludicrous assertions that were proven wrong or completely unfounded, or, you know, somebody that you've never heard of before who is suddenly espousing all of this knowledge that they have into Apple's supply chain that nobody's ever heard of before. You know, the first time somebody comes out and says something like that, yeah, that we have no idea who that person is. Now, over time, if somebody is continuing to assert and is continually proven right, then that's a person that you start paying a little bit more attention to. And part of that gets hard to parse sometimes. And so there's a little bit of that's part of what we like to do when we filter news to make sure that we're talking about some of the more interesting stuff, is we may try to make sure that it's legit, and we try to make sure, you know, like John said, you know, sometimes some of that stuff comes with a warning, with various levels of skepticism in that warning, depending who wrote it.
I have a friend who quit writing for his publisher because on MacWeb, because they would write the title for him and they would have an attitude, and it was clear he was a former Apple employee, and it was clear they had an agenda. So they write this outrageous article title and hand it to him and say, okay, go write the story. And he say, this isn't true. And they say, we don't care. Go write it anyway. And after a little bit of that, he just threw in the towel and said, I'm not going to write for you anymore.
Which is probably the easier thing to do overall, I would imagine, than to go out and be fake, because then that's your cred, is that you've gone out and written all of these false stories.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I can see that being an issue. So, so spend your weekend being a little bit skeptical of all that stuff you keep seeing everywhere. And let us know how that works for you, and let us know what you're using in order to make sure that you are distinguishing the reasonably legitimate from the reasonably ludicrous. We would like to get those tips from you as comments on the site over at MacObserver.com. You can email us at observations@MacObserver.com, and you can find us on Twitter at TMO Daily. Andrew, thank you so much for coming by to talk about science with me.
Yeah, my pleasure. That was a great discussion.
And my friendly neighborhood robot, John Martellaro, thank you for being here.
You are very welcome.
All right. I'm going to send John off on a subroutine, so I will talk to all of you later. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to you Monday. In the meantime, have a great weekend and be excellent to each other.